We've taken it quite a bit down this afternoon. We started on a high note this morning. Krishna in the spiritual world, Krishna in his eternal activities with his devotees, sweet Krishna playing his flute, the gopis that dropped everything and simply gave up all security in life. Who was going to maintain them? When Krishna blew his flute, they left home. They left their maintainers. Who now was going to look after them? They didn't care. They just went for Krishna. Krishna. They gave up all material calculation and gave it all to Krishna. Everything simply went there in the forest, broke all relationships, and trusted that from this devotional service, all auspiciousness will come. Shraddha Sakti Vishwas Kai Subriya Nishjai Krishna Bhakti Kaur Sarvakarma Krita Hai. They had this firm faith that from devotional service all good will come. That's what it meant when the gopis left. They didn't just become like outcasts in the village, but they left their maintainers. So they were fully trusting in Krishna. Well, the morning went by, and from that initial high, that initial pure devotional service, we gradually came down to regulative principles, because we could see our minds are sinful, our hearts are still having many material desires. Therefore, regulative principles are helping us to hold on to something and give us a grip on life and a clear what to do, what not to do. Even if we may struggle sometimes, that may happen to some, I'm not saying to all, but to some. Even if there is a struggle, I sometimes say these vows of initiation, when we are following them, and when we are living with them nicely, then they are like a desired tree that produce so many fruits. But when we don't follow them, that those same flowers will still be there, but then they will beat our heart like a stick. See? So therefore, some are above the vows, some are below the vows, but whatever it is, we live with them. And either they flourish in our heart, or they beat our heart. There was one devotee who told me, said like, I just can't chant anymore. I said, well, phew, why not? I just don't have any taste. I don't have any taste. I said, well, taste or no taste, you know. It's you have to understand one thing. And that is this, is that for you, there are only two options. One option is to be a happy devotee. The other option is to be an unhappy devotee. Yes. Too late now. No turning back. So it is like that for many of us. We can choose. When we take shelter of these vows and of this process, then we can become a happy devotee. And if we just cut corners and break them a little here and bend them a little there and forget them on Sundays or, you know, or Fridays, you know, whatever. Or a whole weekend or a long weekend off. Whatever it may be. If we do so, then the vows will beat our heart. 3.5 principle, 3.75 principle, 4 minus principle, it will beat our heart. So, therefore, we have now come to the part where we discuss Varnashram. Varnashram is in itself not transcendental. It is a material system. It is a system to regulate material society. In a way, you could say it's a support structure for spiritual life. Varnashram without devotional service is condemned in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said in Bhagavatam that Varnashram must be sansidhya hari darsanam. It must be for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, Hari. Yeah, not. Otherwise, what is the point? One can be the perfect Brahmana, and that is punya, but it is within the material world. It doesn't make one free from the cycle of birth and death. Only when the devotional service is connected to it is Varnashram meaningful. Well, let us begin with the ashrams. The Brahmacharya ashram is valuable, absolutely. And in the Vedic culture, it was recommended that one would take some training in the Brahmacharya ashram. Brahmacharya Gurukule Vasudatta Guru Hitam. The Brahmacharya would stay for some time in the Gurukul of a spiritual master. He would learn to become detached, he would study the Vedic literatures, he would beg alms for the spiritual master, give them to the spiritual master, and wait to be called for prasad. And if it was forgotten, then he didn't show up. So he was learning to be sense-controlled and detached, and then he got married. So that, of course, was a good system. Nowadays, we spend so much time and energy in education. All education for the sake of a material career, but no education in moral principles whatsoever. Therefore, Prabhupada used to condemn mundane education and put a stress on this the spiritual type of education. Of learning high moral principles. Yeah? You might say, but if you don't get that kind of modern education, then how will you connect to the world? Right? Well, but we see that that some of our Gurukul graduates are doing well. We have two here in Sydney area. And one is Sri Pramat, who is a Gurukul graduate, and the other one is Prem Vikash, who is like one of the managers in Govinda Valley. And Prem Vikash had worked for some years in a corporate environment and professionally. And he would often present these principles, you know, like various principles, and they said, "Where did you get these amazing principles from? And that is very deep and very valuable, actually." And they truly appreciated what he had learned. So his Gurukul education had a value in his business environment, because actually it had taught him principles of ethics. And actually, in the business world, ethics is, believe it or not, yeah, but it's something that is discussed quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There are many training seminars and so on where these topics are being brought up. In some ways, sometimes people in the professional environment are more ethical than we. Were too transcendental to be ethical. Anyway, that was a little bit about education and about Brahmacharya life. In England, they are encouraging students who graduate or young boys to take 1 year off, 1 year sabbatical. So take 1 year sabbatical and be a brahmachari for 1 year at least. And they send them to chok parties over there, like in real brahmachari atmosphere in Mumbai. And then after a year they go back to their careers. But they got something. That was a year they got something. Something they bring with them in their way of life, a foundation. Because actually, when Srila Prabhupada started this movement in 1966, it began to take off in America, then basically all the devotees that became part of the movement, they were young, and practically all were unmarried, and the result was they all moved into the temple. Then after some years, there was a bigger temple in Los Angeles. Some were married, but they lived in apartments, very small ones, studio type of apartments right next to the temple. And they were also spending all their time in the temple. So in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada's movement was temple-based and it was very concentrated. The training was very concentrated. The devotees would do everything together. They were always together. It's like we are sometimes together. And then we live all over the place. One lives here, one lives there. Srila Prabhupada conceived ideas of communities, devotee communities, where devotees would live together so that they would be in an environment which stimulates spiritual life, where, such communities are possible. It is possible. In Los Angeles, the Wat Sika Avenue is the address of the temple. You can find it on these days on Krishna.com or in the Bhaktivedanta magazine, Wat Sika Avenue. And if you come in Wat Sika Avenue, practically all of Wat Sika Avenue is owned by devotees. They bought up all the flats. The whole street. Everybody bought up in that street. And that is something to be duplicated. Why don't we try something like that? All try and move together as much as possible. More and more. That is useful. It is immediately noticeable. If you live in an apartment building and there's another devotee moving in the same building, suddenly you have a devotee and meet each other from time to time. But one lives in the west, one lives in the north, one lives in the south, and guess where the other one lives? In the east. How did you know? Yes. Right. And then maybe not every Sunday, but every other Sunday or every Sunday it works out, or when the weather is not too good and the kids don't have some sports event, then we come together. Are we trying to make it easy for ourselves, or are we just going along with the flow? The flow is not going to take us towards Krishna. If we don't take initiatives to bring more Krishna consciousness into our life, it will not happen. Matsya Avatar was a designer in Italy, a furniture designer, Italian furniture, and some other interior designs. And he had 9 different design contracts when he met Prabhupada. And there was a discussion with Prabhupada which lasted for 1 hour. And in that time, he became completely convinced. This Krishna consciousness is the essence of life. It is what I should give my life to. And he also realized that that means I have to make changes. With these 9 contracts that I have, there is no space in my life for Krishna consciousness. I will have to adjust something. So he decided that out of the 9 to keep the 2 best ones, and he calculated the ramifications of it. And said, well, we're going to tighten the belt a little bit, but we'll survive. will manage. And he did it. He had courage. He cut off 9 of 7 contracts, kept 2, maintained his family somehow or other, but created more time in this way, and which he spent with Krishna consciousness. One time, Matsya Avatar came to Srinamayapur, and at that time I was the manager of the construction of Srila Prabhupada Samadhi. And we were just looking for an architect to do the interior design. And I was looking everywhere and I couldn't find one. And then one day I saw Matsya Avatar, and I just like, you know, the light bulb started burning there. That's my designer. So somehow or other I did whatever I could, you know, gave him the royal tour, gave him pasta and pizza since he's Italian. Everything, you know, brought out the best olive oil that I could get, and somehow or other found a way to his heart, and then asked him. I asked him, and he was certainly interested, and he of course needed to consider it. I immediately arranged that he got a special invitation from the GVC Executive Committee to take on the design, and like that I did what I could, you know, to get him on board, and I got him on board. So we became good friends, and after some time it was my turn to visit him in Italy. And I came to his house, and it was quite cultured in his house, because as soon as I came in, he greeted me and so on, and he said, like, he offered me a printout with a full schedule, just something like a retreat here. There was a full schedule of what we were going to do, and there was like a lot of spiritual activity in there. Some hearing, some chanting, some kirtan, and so, okay, then you have to go to work, and this and that. Everything was very, very organized. And then in the house, the ladies, that was his mother, his wife, his daughter, they were living on the ground floor, and he was living upstairs with his son. And then separated the men upstairs, the ladies downstairs. That's how we did it. In the middle, there was the temple room. And everything was designed in a very nice way, since he was an interior designer. In the morning, it was cool when I was there. So in the morning, the deities were getting hot cups of tea. And they had special, you know, herbal tea, but had special tea cups, etc. Very beautiful for the deities, everything. So, and the deity worship was really the center of the house. Because I got to know him well, one other good quality I saw in him was that when there was a problem in the family, anything with any member of the family, then he considered that as good as his own problem. He never thought like, oh, my wife has a problem. In fact, she always has problems. It was just like, okay, my other half has a problem, so that's my problem, that's our problem. And then he took the time to sort of work it out, and he did the same with his children. And I looked at him and I thought, God, he really is a good grihastha. He's a very good grihastha, one who really like has accepted the whole family as like under his care. Even his father. His father was a devotee. His father had done service His father was restoring old buildings in Italy, old churches, these very beautiful aristocratic Italian buildings, and he was restoring them. So his father also built a temple in Villa Vendamme in Italy. He made these amazing marble floors and columns, and if you see it, you can go there one day. It's quite a place. I was there a few months ago. He had a little kirtan nail there, and I was looking at all that marble and thinking, boy. And I remembered Matsya's father, and I thought, yes, he did it with his own hands. The old man was the last thing he did. That's what Matsya told me. And then his father became very ill, and as he was ill, and in his final days, his father was becoming a little bit influenced by the disease and overwhelmed by the whole situation. So he was just lying in bed and he wouldn't change. And then one day Matsya went into the room and he said to his father, "So, and now it's enough." I was like, "Ha, I'm dying, you know, what is this?" Said, "Yes, now it's enough. You're gonna chant." And the father said, "I can't chant." And he says, "Oh yes, you will chant. You will chant." The father said, "I can't." He said, "You will chant or I will beat you." And apparently he was so serious that the father chanted. And at the end of his life he was chanting. He left his body chanting. So Matsya was very serious about taking care of his family some way or other. And he's still taking care of his family. And he's a dear friend of mine. And I'm not saying that we must do everything he did or do it exactly like he's doing it. And everyone is different. Yes. Everyone is different. But one thing is for sure, he is a good Grihastha. Yeah? A good Grihastha, one who really makes something out of his life. Yeah? One who doesn't just go alone with the flow. One who is not just another sheep in the herd. And looking to the left, looking to the right. So, if we really want to live a spiritual life, then we have to make some arrangements to bring more Krishna in our life. If we want to be a household, household life is of course complicated. Because household life is very busy. It's extremely busy. Maybe I've told you about that cartoon where on the first picture it shows a baby and under it says, "too young." On the second picture it shows a couple, full moon behind, too much in love. Third one shows the family. A bunch of kids, you know, both have six arms and she's holding the kids and doing the shopping, cleaning the house and the cooking. He's like got a computer here and a drill there and a phone and this and that. Too busy. Next one, an old man trying to hear. Too old. The last picture, a picture of a grave, and there's a cross on it, too late. So, there's always an excuse. And just now, we happen to be in that phase of life, where it is just very difficult to be Krishna conscious, isn't it? It just happens to be now. I would be Krishna conscious. I would really be. I want to. I really want to, and I would put more into it, but it's just very difficult. You see. This is the mind. The mind is our energy. We have to be creative. We have to think of ways. We may have to make changes. Yes. This is important. The Grihastha Ashram. The Grihastha Ashram is obviously the mainstay of society. Most people will be in the Grihastha Ashram. The standards for the Grihastha Ashram are quite strict, actually. Amongst householders, there are two categories. One category is the Grihamedi. The other category is the Grihastha. The Grihamedi, his life is based on enjoying the senses. And the whole world is filled with Grihamedis, who are the Medha is, in India you sometimes see how they tie a bull to a rod, and then he walks in circles, and there's a stone attached to it, and they grind grains, or sometimes they pump water, or things like that. Yeah. So that the Medha, the Sanskrit word for that wooden beam, is Medha. The Griha Medha, just going in a circle around sense enjoyment, and of course the center of it is sex life. Of all the sense enjoyment. Yes. In the Grihastha Ashram it is very different, because in the Grihastha Ashram Krishna is the center. And Krishna is in the middle. And then of course all the other things are there. Including sex life is also there, but it's not the center. In fact, as Srila Prabhupada explained to us the standard of the Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Viruddha Bhute Su Kama Svi Maritar Subhava. I am that sex life which is according to religious principles, says in Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada said that sex life is basically meant for procreation. First of all, within marriage, then for procreation, and practically once a month, Srila Prabhupada said. And then one may chant 50 rounds as a means of purification. If one wants to know a little more about that, the Manu Samhita. The Manu Samhita is giving also information about the regulative principles. And the Manu Samhita is saying that a Grihastha may try to conceive a child between the 6th and the 16th day of the lady's monthly cycle. And at that time there is fertility, and then it is said there are the odd days and the even days, and during the odd days there is more chance, during the even days there is more chance to get a son, and on the odd days a daughter. So in this way, we see that the Grihastha Ashram is in the Manu Samhita there is a strict standard and a high standard. Of course, this is the standard that the Brahmins were following, and not the standard that the Sudras were following. But this is the standard in Manu Samhita. And for devotees, this is the standard. Yeah. So a lot of devotees in our movement are not always clear what is meant by that fourth principle, non illicit sex. The definition is not always clear. And especially in India, say, no, we no problem with these things. No problem. What is illicit sex? Does it mean outside of marriage? Does it mean to visit prostitute. Yes, it means that, but it means more than that. Illicit sex, as it has been defined, even within marriage, even there, there are restrictions. Even there, one cannot just follow his lusty desires. But there, according to the principles of Dharma, one may engage in sexual activity once a month. So now we see that that's quite the standard. And some need a little water.
Meditate on the Supreme Lord.
Ashtanga yoga, although it is the asanas, the essence of Ashtanga yoga, if it's done properly, mostly it's not done properly, but if it's done properly, it leads to samadhi. That is the aim. The aim of Ashtanga yoga is samadhi. So you perform all the asanas, you perform various disciplines, ultimately to come to samadhi. And samadhi means absorption. That is why Ashtanga yoga is placed so high in the ladder, because it's supposed to give us that samadhi. All right, we'll jump now. I know that was very quick. Another day, we'll do a whole hour just on the yoga ladder. Man, they want to do, you can't do everything. I just quickly put in the script. Now I am giving the essence of the yoga ladder here in a sort of simplified form. I'm giving karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. These three are the essential levels of yoga. So karma yoga. Karma yoga means that you dovetail your personal desires in Krishna's service. What if you come to the next Sunday program in a car like this, with the number plate and everything, you know? And for Krishna. And some people might go, yeah, sure, mate. For Krishna, right. Yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
It may be that there are some mixed desires here, and then we're full. But we can use it for Krishna. This is true. In Rati Yatra, Lord Jagannath can drive in this car. Yes. Or on other special occasions, if there's a sannyasi to pick up. To impress him, you know, like this.
Yes.
So that was karma yoga, where we are using our desires in the service of Krishna. Now we are going to jnana yoga. I hope you can see the picture. The Yamuna is the background, very auspicious. That's of course Lord Mahavishnu, and all the universes are coming from his body, and in one of them there's Arvadaksaya Vishnu, and you see how there is a lotus coming from his navel, and a golden figure is seated on there as Lord Brahma. You know? So just to give an idea of what that picture is. Then, jnana yoga means to maintain a Shastric perspective, philosophy, of ourselves, of our relationship with Krishna, and of the world around us. Aham Brahmasmi. I am not the body, but eternal spirit soul. Well, that has, of course, quite some consequences. So devotees remind ourselves again and again, I'm not the body, I'm eternal spirit soul. So these desires of the body are not so important. Not so important because that's not really me. They're actually not my desires. They are simply the desires of the body. And isn't it true that when I was young and a child, I didn't have such desires, and now I do. Just see. It is actually just a few hormones that are released at a certain age, and now these desires are there. That they have nothing to do with the soul that is within the vehicle. I'm not the body, but eternal spirit soul. This is jnana yoga. Connecting with Krishna through philosophy, a Shastric perspective. Jivera Sarupai, Krishna and Nityananda. All living beings are the eternal servants of Krishna. So that's both is there. I'm not the body, but the eternal spirit soul. All living beings are the eternal servants of Krishna. So this is the philosophy that one has to remember.
And finally,
look at the bigger picture.
It's right under there, the bigger picture. I'm going to make it a little bigger for you.
Um, the whole universal situation. Why look here at this little place called Hornsby? Yeah, I mean, wherever it is, we can look on our phones and they will tell us where we are. I typed it in on my computer and I just typed it in. Said, where am I? And then a screen came up and said, do you want us to tell you? I said, yes. And then it told me where I was. And I was thinking, I'm not the only one who knows where I am. Anyway, but all that is not important, that we are here in this realm, because actually there is the sky, and beyond the sky there is all this. Right? So, how small and insignificant are we? How small is this life? How small are these petty desires to do so many things? Ants' dreams, that's what I call them. Ants' dreams. Have you ever seen ants? Have you seen ants? Okay. Did you see what they're doing? Ants. What are they doing?
Working.
Also, did you ever see an ant taking a vacation? Did you ever see some ants on the beach? You know, sunny's on,
lying back.
Did you ever see any ants like that? No, they're always working. Well, then whatever they're doing must be important to them. Otherwise, why would they work so hard? It must be really important to them that they work so hard. And how important is it to us? Are you losing any sleep over it, over the ants? Personally, I don't. I couldn't care less what the ants are doing. And because from our perspective, it's quite insignificant. An ant's dream. Insignificant. So, we must look at our life and all the things that matter so much that actually in the bigger picture. And we do this again and again. So by the connection with the Shastra, we are getting the bigger picture, and it helps. It helps. We can, things look more relative. We feel the tail is higher, and then we think, yeah, I've been trying to fulfill these desires for so many lives, and still not satisfied. It's actually no point. So philosophy is one of our tools that we use to deal with the pushings of the mind and the senses. Of course, at the bottom there is the small letters of the contract, which you can hardly read, but I'll read them for you, as I get my glasses on. The senses are so strong that even a man of learning is struggling. So this helps, but it's not waterproof. It's like one of those jackets, you know, you don't get totally wet, but you're not going to stay dry. Yeah. That's how it is. Yeah. But it helps. It helps nonetheless. Better than nothing.
I skipped this slide.
The third one is just simple. Right? Bhakti. To develop deep attachment to Krishna. That's it. That's the answer. Seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. When it finally comes to bhakti, it immediately starts with Maya Shaktama Parta Yogi Yunima Asraya Asansin Samuna. It says, Tat Srinu, hear about me. And hear about me. This is important. We must hear about Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, we can develop attachment to Krishna. But we are not hearing. Ari also never promised that. That's one of those unspoken vows, yeah. That you have to hear about Krishna, you never speak that. That's it. But no, the hearing about Krishna is essential. Without it, it's not possible. Without hearing, it won't work. It is said that if we don't recognize a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, it says if we don't regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam, then gradually, I remember it correctly again. As a man becomes strong by regularly eating grains, in the same way, and if a man is not eating grains regularly, he becomes weak. In the same way, one must regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And if one is not regularly hearing, then one will become weak spiritually. But we don't, it's not part of our culture, it's not what we do. We don't hear Bhagavatam every day. For how long? But it can be done. No, we could do it. We could put on a tape while you're in the kitchen. I put on every morning, I put a tape. Yeah? As soon as I get up. And then at least do it, and I carry it with me also to the bath and everything. Yeah? I'm listening to the bath. While I gurgle away, shave. Yeah, that's a lot of time. It's morning in the top. So I heard something extra this morning. Yoja, try that one. By the time you get through all that wall, you're in a whole canto, you know? That's okay. They can play. So we can listen to recordings and in the car. Of course, say I've got more HM rounds in the car. Alright. Then it's time to get up a little earlier. I got to sleep, I agree. Then it's time to go to bed a little earlier. I want to relax a bit. That's the problem. That's the problem. Just stop it. To quote a well-known devotee, just stop it.
And I couldn't sleep.
And I was just getting up at 1 o'clock.
It was great. I was chanting, and it was also peaceful, and nobody was up, and I was just walking around in the night, Hare Krishna, and I actually had fun, had fun chanting for a change. I was not in anxiety, when we're going to finish these rounds, and you know, I really should be doing something. There was nothing to do, and I was just chanting and I couldn't sleep anyway, so it was great. And I just got so inspired that I realized this is very powerful. This is a great boost. So I changed my whole program and I started to go to bed really early after that and then get up every day at 2 o'clock and I kept it throughout the years. Of course, it meant, you know, when you're tired, when I'm tired, then I forget it at 2 o'clock to be in bed at 8. And that's tough. Because there's always a reason to stay up longer. So when I was strict, no, 7:45, I'm going up, start brushing the teeth and get ready, and that's it, you know, I'm ready for the night. Tuck myself in at 8, lie out. 2 o'clock. Still, yes. And then suddenly, after one lighting, then I had time to read, then I had time to study. And that kept me going because the whole day, you know, then, so then I had my morning program, I was chanting, I was reading, and at 9:30 I was in the office, and all hell would break loose. Because, you know, when you're the president of like a bigger project, it means that all the problems that couldn't be solved by anyone else, they're coming to you. That's how it is. So by the time that a problem reaches you, it's a nasty one. For sure. It's like, it's something you really don't want to deal with. Anyway, the game, of course, is called delegation. Yeah? Is that problem number one? Well, okay, you go there, you go there, you go there, you go there, you go there. So, doing well until there's one that you really can't get rid of. Yeah. Some problems, well, if there's a big problem, the first approach is do nothing and see if it goes away. Some problems just go away by themselves, they do. I learned that as a manager, that when you have a problem, you don't always have to worry, what am I going to do about this? No, just first see if it goes away. if it really doesn't go away, then you're forced to do something. Huh? Okay. Not easy. Mm-hmm. So usually by the time lunch would approach, my head was getting somewhat heated from all this intense problem, so I'd take a little nap, maybe, you know, half hour, just some lunch. And just, I would read something, and then back to work. Yeah. And so I built it in. That's the point, I would build it in, and really build in some hearing and some chanting and some early mornings into my life. And that is needed. You remember that... You remember how earlier this morning I was speaking about spiritual life is about taking a step and how gradually we begin to reach out towards the spiritual world. But you can see there is no weight on my toe at all. Nothing. All the weight is here on the material side.
So I'm completely living my same old material life, but Krishna consciousness is there, and I know I say Jai Prabhu, Hari Bol. I know what to do, Pancha Kopas. I say all the right things, yeah, and all the mantras. I also offer flowers, I'm good at that. But for the rest, are you chanting? I am trying. I'm trying. Are you following the principles? I'm trying. I say, Prabhu, you're not trying. Prabhu, you're crying. Right? Because this way it will not work. We have to put some weight on there. Weight means serious. And to invest on the spiritual side. And to actually make an arrangement for it. Oh, my spiritual life is not really happening. No, no wonder, because you're not doing anything about it. The dinner is not cooking. I mean, I don't understand it, you know. We call all the veggies, but the dinner is not cooking. Yeah, well, you expect the veggies to jump in the pot. We are ready for the offering. I mean, no, you get what you put in, you know. I mean, I know somebody who just throw the vegetables in the pot, right? Then take a big knife and just go while it's boiling, right? That was very quick. But not so tasty as Kurma's cooking. It will take a long time. And with Kurma, every detail has attention. Oh my God. When Kurma's in the kitchen, everything is 11,000 volt. Don't touch it. Don't Yes, cool. But then, super strict, I mean, intense. Sweet as he is, in the kitchen, Kurma is in charge. Huh? But the result, there's the investment, the energy is there. So, on that spiritual side, what are we going to invest? Can I make a plan, something that works for you? But there are principles, and they're the same for all. And early to bed is one of them. In the temple, everybody knows. Eh? In the TV, who live in temples, boy, I mean, we had properly arranged a kind of a military system, and they had a temple commander, you know. All right, lights out, you know. Oops. Dead silent after nine, man. No light, you know. No light, no noise. No giggling in the corridors. Quiet. Now it is, isn't it? In the temples, that's how something like militaristic, and I must admit I didn't like it so much, but the principle, therefore the Grihastha ashram is the ashram of taking responsibility. It is the ashram of responsibility, more so than the brahmacharya ashram. Is the brahmacharya ashram is the life of discipline. It is the life where one is following a strict and rigid discipline. But the grihastha ashram is the ashram of responsibility. It's all about responsibility. Everything has to do with responsibility. Responsible, you do this duty, that duty, so many duties. Your children, bring the money, responsibility. So, we have to take responsibility spiritually. That's it, because in a grihastha ashram means a private situation. There's no one who's going to tell you in the morning. I'm not going to call you. You're going to switch off your phone anyway. Even if I would. We have to then be self-starters in the Grihastha ashram. So put some things in place that we ourselves, put more weight on the spiritual side. And because if we don't,
we're in the skin.
Oh, that was good. If we don't, then how can we expect that we feel comfortable within these principles? The other day I was thinking, do you really think that these four regulative principles is for the whole world? Do you think so? Do you really think that there will be a day when people of the world are going to live with these four principles of the Hare Krishnas? Do you think so? Who thinks so? The whole world? Everybody? You sure? Well, whether that will happen or not, I don't know. But, like I mentioned earlier on, that's not our objective. Our objective is to offer everyone an opportunity to elevate himself, really, spiritually. And spiritually, it obviously means that the weight has to be on the spiritual side. And if we backtrack, okay, let's go through all the steps. There's the rolls again. Still there, didn't go away. Oops. In the Bhagavad Gita, we find these processes. We find Karma Yoga, we find Jnana Yoga, and we find Bhakti Yoga. And we will find that we will use all three of them at different points in time. Sometimes we are completely absorbed. And as practitioners, sometimes we really feel our devotional sentiments, and we really feel so enlightened. And other times, we don't. Other times, it's just a struggle. Yesterday, or Radhastami, remember we were like feeling like, yes, 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 I want to do this for the rest of my life. And then now again, it's struggle, 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 struggle. Alright, so at the time when we struggle, we have Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga as a safety net. When we are not able to stay on the ecstasy of bhakti, then the next level is we take shelter of philosophy. Then we can remember, I'm not the body, I'm eternal spirit, soul, eternal servant of Krishna. I've been going through so many lives, and the bigger picture is like that. Then we take shelter of that. And at the same time, we do something for Krishna that we like to. Like if you like to if you like to cook, you cook for Krishna. If you like to sing, you sing for Krishna. If you like to drive, you drive for Krishna. If you're a handyman, then okay, well then, drill holes for Krishna, and if you want to do the garden, okay, move to a place where you can do gardening. You have to find a service. This idea of finding a service, something that suits us. There are many people, they come to the temple, they are there, and they come to the programs and this, that, for a long time. You see them every Sunday, and then after some time they fizzle out. And then they look like what happened, or what didn't happen. And one thing you find is, it didn't find a service. It just didn't find a service. Something that absorbed them. Something they like to do. Where's the schedule? Good, we should look at what the time was, because I got a note that the play wasn't happening and that I had to fill the time and didn't mind that at all. In fact, I liked it. I thought I'll do some drama myself. So that's fine. And I wanted to do a little more kirtan, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
And then we can. Then we can do a few Q&As, a few question and answers. So let's go. So let's forget about the safety nets and let's just go back to no Rolls Royce during the kirtan.